This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
Hi, Marcella. Welcome to Joy 94.9.
Hi, I'm so glad to finally speak to you.
You're no stranger to the music industry. You learned the violin and you also loved soul and Motown music, performed in a few different bands in the 70s, worked with Aretha Franklin, Chaka Khan, hitmaker David Foster, who obviously went on to become a very successful producer for Celine Dion, Mariah Carey and Barbara Streisand. Tell us a little bit about that history, Marcy.
You know, I grew up in Detroit, so when I used to walk to school with a little radio in my ear, that was all that would be Motown. You know, I'd listen to Stevie Wonder. I can just picture myself walking down the street on the way to elementary school listening to Little Stevie Wonder, as he was called back then. And then at school, they would just play, you know, at school lunches, they would play all the Motown greats like Temptations and the Supremes. And then my first instrument, I decided to play the violin when I was 8. It was kind of in the family, which I only found out later on in my life, that my great-grandfather was a concert violinist. And I don't know why I chose the violin, but I wanted to play the harp. But my parents said, no, it's too big and expensive. And I was like, well, what about a Stradivarius? I mean, that's really expensive. A lot smaller. But anyway, so I played it for maybe 4 years. I was in the orchestra. I kind of got to the point where it got a little too difficult. Like I couldn't handle the vibrato for some reason. Then I got into guitar. My father was always really supportive, and he took me to see orchestras, and we saw Isaac Stern play, the concert violinist. We saw him play. That was amazing. But he loved music, and he played ukulele, and he taught me how to play, and I loved it. And then I got a guitar. I played an accordion, and we had some friends that we used to spend time if they had a piano, so he knew a few songs. He was very musical and always encouraged my music. My mother liked music and still does, but my father was really very supportive of it. Anyway, so I got in a few bands when I finally made a decision when I was like 18, this is what I'm going to do for the rest of my life. And I started playing around Detroit, and I was in a band called Julia, and Bob Seger's manager heard about us and asked us to back up Bob Seger when he was looking for a band. And then, you know, I've been going on and on ever since. I've just been in band after band. I got lucky, you know, after working with Seger. Then I moved to Oklahoma. I worked with Leon Russell, who was one of my idols. And then came out to L.A. And, well, it was through my work in Oklahoma, though, that I got connected with Eric Clapton.
Yeah, quite a history.
Yeah. Well, some of the guys that I was in the band with Seger with were from Oklahoma once the band kind of changed. And then they invited me to move to Tulsa, and I thought, well, yeah, I want to move there because I want to meet Leon and I want to work with him. So it was through that move to Tulsa that I got to work with Leon, and then also working with these guys in Oklahoma, that's how I got to work with Eric, because they were all connected with the bass player, Carl Radel, who was in Derek and the Dominoes. And Carl used to come and hear us play. We were kind of like the big fish in the little pond with our band, you know. Everybody used to come and jam with us, like the Gap Band and J.J. Cale. Loads of people. And Leon would come and sit in with us all the time. And then I was in Leon's band, and the other guys went off to work with Eric. And then I joined them after my stint with Leon ended, so that's kind of how that all got started.
Now, Marcy, I'm a bit envious because last year, or the year before, I actually went to a Chaka Khan concert, and I actually met her backstage, and she's absolutely divine. And you worked with her in the 70s, is that right?
Well, actually, I never worked with her.
Okay.
I wrote a song that she recorded.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, it was a song called So Close.
Oh, wow, I didn't know that. There you go.
I think it was in the very early 80s that I wrote the song with a writing partner of mine named Richard Feldman, who produced the first Shakespeare Sister record, actually, but he's a really good writer. And it was with him and a girl named Pam Tillis, who is a pretty well-known country artist.
You also mentioned before Eric Clapton. Now, you toured with Eric in the 70s, And again on stage with him in 1985 for Live Aid. And being on that massive stage must have been incredible as a performer.
Oh, God, it really was. We were in the middle of a U.S. tour, so we were actually in Los Angeles, and then while we were touring, the manager, Eric's manager, got a request for us to perform at Live Aid. So we had to stop wherever we were on our tour and fly to Philadelphia. And Phil Collins had produced the album that we were out promoting. So the idea was that Phil was going to join us. He did Live Aid in London, and then he flew in on Concorde that day and met us in Philadelphia. We were waiting for him to arrive on this helicopter, and we took our positions on stage, and it was this big revolving stage. It was as soon as the band before us ended, we took our positions, and there was a curtain, and then, right, Phil arrived, the helicopter landed, Phil arrived, and we all took our places. There were double drums, Phil and our drummer, Jamie Oldacre. And as the stage turned around, we were, you know, in position, the curtain opened, and it was like, the sound of it was deafening. I mean, Eric looked at me, and he just went, whoa! And I was like, oh, my God, I can't believe this. But it was really an amazing, exhilarating experience. And the crowd was so primed. They were so ready and just so incredibly receptive. So it was really fun. Yeah, I remember seeing Madonna backstage that day, walking around, you know, at Live Aid, and she was with Sean Penn at the time. We didn't really say much, you know, everybody just kind of keeps themselves usually, but it was a really exciting time. There was so much being opened up in the world of music, with so much different music and people experimenting more at that time, so it was a really wonderful gathering of different, you know, talents and different genres. It was interesting.
Going to fast forward a couple of years to 1988, was the year Shakespeare's Sister was born, and the debut album Sacred Heart, which featured the track Your History, and the second album Hormonally Yours in 1992. Your partnership there with Siobhan Fahey, what an epic duo. Working with her, what actually made you click as a duo?
Well, you know, at first, somebody that I mentioned a little bit earlier named Richard Feldman, he moved out to L.A. after I did, and we started doing a lot of writing together. He had a studio in his house, and one day he found out that Dave Stewart and Siobhan were moving in across the street from him. So after they settled in, he went over and introduced himself. And she was very pregnant with her first child, and after talking to her, she said that, you know, I'm interested in starting my own band. I want to leave Bananarama. And so my friend Richard invited me to come and meet her and just to see how we'd get along. You know, I was a writer and a session singer and artist in my own right. And he thought it would be a good combination. And we just started writing in it. Initially, I was just like a hired hand, you know. I was just invited in to, you know, sing, play, write, you know, do whatever. It wasn't until that second album that I was an official member. But that's kind of how it started. It was a real, it was very different from what I had ever done before. I came more from a blues rock, Americana kind of rock, and also R&B and soul. But I injected that into what we did with Shakespeare Sister. I always, that was just kind of the way I sang, so it always worked within it. But it was quite an unusual pairing. The two of us were really different. We had different musical tastes. But we met in the middle because we had other, you know, things, similarities that we really loved, like T-Rex and Sly and the Family Stone and bands like that.
Your history.
Your history.
No good for me.
No good for me.
Your history.
Your history.
Nah, 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 nah.
Your history.
Like a walnut shoe.
My eye.
You're nothing new.
Your history.
Your history.
Stay was a huge worldwide hit. It just went to number 3 in Australia and in the UK, number 4 in the US. When you were writing that track with Dave and Siobhan, was there something special that was happening when you were writing that track? Was it? Did you get that feeling back then when you were writing Stay?
I think it's really rare that you get that feeling. I mean, I get that feeling a lot when I write. I think, wow, I've written a really great song here, and then it could be something that most people go, oh yeah, that's really good. No, you never know what's going to happen. When we wrote it, basically Dave and Siobhan came to my house, banged on my door at about 10 o'clock in the morning. I was always a late riser, and my husband answered the door, and Dave said, we need to see Marcy. So my husband went and got me. I said, hold on, I need some coffee first. You know? Give me a minute here, you guys.
Yeah.
We were in the middle of writing the Hormonally Yours album, and Dave started playing me this idea. Or he had the beginning of the song. He had like a whole verse. When he got to the chorus, I don't know what possessed me. I just started singing the melody, you know, the stay with me. I don't know why. It just kind of came to my head. And then we went on from there and developed it. Then we came up with the second verse, and then we came up with the middle eight. So it just kind of evolved. We didn't really know, and it wasn't really until Siobhan and I did all the demos at my little home studio. I had a little eight-track. And it wasn't until we played our little demo to Chris Thomas, who is producing, who is working with Dave, who is, I'm sure you're familiar, one of the best producers of all time. He did, like, Pulp and The Pretenders and Innex. Anyway, he heard that. He heard our demo. He was the one who said, number one smash. We were all sitting in their living room in Dave and Siobhan's house, and we were having dinner, and he heard it. We were playing it for everybody, all our new songs, and he was the one who said, number one smash.
Like,
really? Okay, well, whatever. We were writing a concept album. We were these cat women on the moon, and we were going to buy this B-movie called Cat Women from the Moon. The movie was made in 1952, and we were going to try and buy the rights to it and superimpose ourselves into it. We had no idea. We were just picking scenes from the movie to write songs to, and it became this iconic album. I mean, I didn't really have an idea that was going to happen, but you just never know.
When I hear the song today, I think of the video because the song and the video go hand in hand. It's an amazing, touching, inspirational video. And Siobhan, I heard, had a bit to drink that day to get into character. Is that right?
We believe Siobhan was a little bit on the tipsy side. Did you have a bit to drink to get into character for the video?
I heard that she did, but I don't know how much she drank or what. Really, honestly don't know, but I heard that she did get,
Let's play that classic track from Shakespeare Sister. This is Stay, more with Marcella Detroit next on Joy.
Stay with me.
Joy 94.9 Sound Museum, your inside guide to the music industry with myself, Leo and Brian this evening. On the phone from LA tonight is Marcella Detroit. We just heard that track from Shakespeare's Sister. In 1993, you sort of parted ways. Why was the split happened? Because obviously you had some massive hits with Together, and then, I mean, from a public point of view, it just sort of stopped. What was happening behind the scenes?
Well, God, it's a long, kind of a long story, but, you know, I think it was really because, to put it quite simply, we were really different people. Mm. And at that time, when we were working on that album, Siobhan had kept saying, I really want to spend more time with my family. So after we do the promotion for this album, I really want to spend more time with my family. You can do your own album. That was always the plan. So while we were touring, I was preparing to do my album. And then when it came time, she wanted to be with her family. But the truth is also, we were not really getting along. There was some disagreements, put it nicely. And then she basically said, all's well that ends well, through a message via her publisher at this Ivor Novello Award, saying that I was no longer in the band. And I was like, okay, well, that's cool. I was getting ready to do my own record anyway, and that's kind of the way it ended.
Yeah. It's time to move on. Move on you did. In 1994, you released I Believe.
Can I just say that's my favourite song of yours, Marcella Detroit. Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, it actually was quite well in Australia.
Yes, it did.
I have a gold record on my wall.
You sure do. I probably bought 10 million copies, that's why.
Oh, really? Wow.
No, that was from the album Jewel, and that song, I believe, went top 10 here in Australia, which was fantastic. Over the years, you've also released other solo albums. You've been writing and collaborating with other artists. And you've also been, I mean, obviously these days, reality TV is, I guess, the norm, and people do different shows and things, but you did a show called Pop Star to Opera Star back in 2010, and it's no surprise with that high voice that you did pretty well.
Yeah, oh my God, that show kept me up at night. I take everything I do way. I can tell you, I mean, it was always a dream of mine to sing with an orchestra, and this was the chance that I got to do it. They gave me the most difficult arias, but I couldn't believe that I could actually do them. The training was pretty brutal, and there was no variation on any kind of melodies. You had to stick exactly to the melodies, and I'm the kind of person, I like to improvise, but there was none of that. I would get my knuckles, you know, verbally slapped if I did any of that, but it was a great experience. You know, I learned a lot, and I learned what I could do, and I really devoted all my time and effort to it. It was a fun experience. No matter what you do, it keeps coming back to me and you. Give a little bit of love and you get it back. Give a little bit of pain, call it a trap. Every little thing that you say or do, give a little bit of love and it'll come back to you.
All over social media, I've seen the hashtag Music for Nepal, and look, one of the most tragic events that took place in Nepal with the shattering earthquake, which really caused a bit of trouble for the people of Nepal. You're contributing a track for a compilation, and you're obviously getting your music out for good causes to help the people rebuild Nepal. And I believe John Von Arlen, as well as Tony Childs, are working together to donate tracks for this special compilation. Tell us what this means to you and what type of song you're contributing to the compilation.
It's a song that I wrote with this guy named Alex Hush and a guy named Rick Scott. It's a track that they sent me. It's a dance track, which kind of goes in keeping with my newer music. But yeah, a lot of people, like Nick Cave has a song on it. This girl named Annie Hogan is contacting me. Billy Ray Barton, who is a great artist from Germany. I think there's like 75 tracks on this. And every bit of the money that's being raised is going to help the cause. Yeah, I love to be able to help. Sometimes you feel really helpless that you can't do anything to help people. But I mean, it's just so wonderful to be able to do something nice for people who don't have anything, who have been hit by this devastating thing.
Mm.
It's wonderful to be able to be a part of it.
Let's talk your gay and lesbian fan base, because I guess that sort of started with Siobhan being in Bananarama, then doing Shakespeare Sister with you, and obviously you being in that band with her, I guess Bananarama fans followed her into that genre, and then they also followed you over the years. So how have you found your gay and lesbian fan base over the years?
Well, Shakespeare Sister, we had a huge gay following.
I know.
Yeah, and I love you know, the gay community, and I've done like 4 or 5 gay prides. I've done Los Angeles, I've done London, I've done San Francisco, I do New York. I'm a huge supporter of the gay community, and I'm always happy to help in any way I possibly can. And I really value the support of the gay community. I think it's, you know, a wonderful thing. I'm all about human rights and equality for all. So, yeah, I think it's a great thing. I'm always going to be a supporter, no matter what.
Now, on your album, Marcy, there's a track. It's one of the new ones. It's called Drag Queen. Now, we are going to spin that here on Joy 94.9. What are your inspirations behind this? And are you looking forward to having a few drag queens perform this one in clubs around the world?
Yeah. So I have to tell you a funny story about this.
Go on.
You know a drag queen... she's Australian. Her name is Courtney Act.
Yes.
We know Courtney.
We do.
Also known as Shane. Yes.
Right, Shane.
How well do you know Courtney?
Okay, well, I'll tell you, a friend of mine who's this entrepreneurial guy, actually sang at his wedding to his partner. He had a party in L.A., and he said, oh, I'm having this drag queen. She's going to come and perform. I'm like, okay, great. And I saw a picture of her. And I thought, wow, how beautiful, right? And then she started performing and singing live. I was really impressed by her voice. And so my friend Bradford is his name. He said, oh, you should meet her. So he brought her over and I met her. And he said, you guys should write together. So I'm like, okay, great. I'd love to do that. So we exchanged emails. We got together. And I went over to his place, and I'd never seen him as a man, by the way, only as a woman.
Okay.
So I go to his house, and he opens the apartment, the door, and I'm looking at this gorgeous man. I mean, absolutely stunning, right?
Yeah. Yes.
So he lets me in, and we start working. I had a problem with some of the equipment because I brought all my portable stuff over, and I had to set everything up. And we really got to know each other because we had to go to pick up some equipment, cord that I was missing. We got to talk. He was so nice and just beautiful. I couldn't stop looking at him, to be quite honest. I felt kind of embarrassed. Like, I thought, oh, my God, looking at him too much?
Oh, that's such a beautiful story.
Well, yeah, but, I mean, you know, I'm a married woman, so it was a little bit weird. And I got home and I told my husband about him, and I said, my God, the drag queen that we saw perform the other night. And he's like, right? I said, absolutely, stunningly gorgeous man, too. And, oh, it was crazy. That night, I actually had a dream about him, but as he was, as the drag queen. And I had a dream. I know you're going to think I'm nuts. But I was kissing Courtney Act in my dream.
Did you tell your husband?
Yeah, of course. Well, you know, my husband's a big girly boy anyway.
Oh, good on him.
I have to say, with Courtney Act, she actually auditioned for Australian Idol back in 2003.
Right.
and actually got into the top 10. Back in the day, she released a song called Rub Me Wrong, and she did like heaps of club gigs and gay events all over the world. And then she was in, of course, the RuPaul's Drag Race, and now she's become this huge star overseas. But her new EP is called Kaleidoscope. It is online now, and it's really, really good.
Yeah?
Yeah, you should check it out.
Yeah, I should. I haven't really heard anything she's done. I did help her write one thing when we got together, but I've not really heard anything that she's done recently, but it's good.
It's good, yes. Yeah, so go into iTunes and type in Courtney Act, and it'll be there for you.
Great.
Excellent.
Yeah, check now, it out.
Now, Marcy, you've got a brand new album and a single, the album Grey Matters, released worldwide on September 6. Obviously, you've had some inspirations behind you which helped put that album together. Tell us, how has your sound changed and, you know, evolved as an artist over time, and what can we expect from this new project from you?
Well, as you can see, you know, I think once I did Shakespeare's Sister, it opened me up. It opened my mind up. I was a little bit more of a purist before then. I only do like blues or soul, or, you know, anything that had soul or funkiness or blues associated, or rock associated to it. Then it opened my mind. And now, ever since then, I tried to stay open and be more creative and experimental. And I've enjoyed it. You know, there have been points where I thought, well, it's getting a little too contrived here. I need to get back to my roots, which is why I did a blues album like in 2006. But then I went back to being more experimental. And this album started about a year ago, and I just thought, you know, instead of putting any limitations on myself and saying, okay, I'm going to do a specific genre or thing, I just sat in my little studio where I am now, and I just thought, just do whatever inspires you. Just be inspired and go for whatever comes to mind. And the first song, it was just kind of like this dance pop thing. And I'm like, wow, okay. So I just went with that. And then every song was really consistent. And so that's what I decided to go with. And that just came naturally to me. I've kind of had a love-hate relationship with dance music. Not all of it. I don't like all of it, but there's some that I really, really love. So I just wanted to experiment with that and push myself and have fun. And that's what I ended up doing.
Now, Marcy, you've been in the industry a long time, and over the years there's been so much change in the industry. I remember when I was growing up buying my 45-inch records and the 12-inches and the vinyl, and then moving into tapes and then CDs, and now it's all download, and there's social media.
It's such an electronic industry.
There's YouTube, there's iTunes. How have you adapted as an artist through those, I guess, format changes and having to connect with your fans in a different way now? Because I guess the public demand, I guess, in some ways, more of an artist these days. They want to know more. They want to be more connected.
And the accessibility is much easier.
Mm, exactly. So how have you coped with that over time?
God, there's so many different aspects of the question that you just presented. It's a little bit more difficult. It's obviously because once the cat was out of the bag with, you know, people with free downloads, and now people expect things to be free. You know, the public wants free music. They expect to have that. Oh, I'm going to give you this free track and that free track if you buy my album, or you can even have my album free if you want to. And I think, you know, as soon as Napster came along and that whole expectation happened, it really has made it a lot more difficult for an artist to make a living. And it has devalued music. It's devalued what an artist owns in their publishing. Even if you talk to any kind of publisher, they'll tell you, wow, well, the value of a catalog has gone down by quite a bit. It's harder to make a living. You have to be really creative. You have to be a little bit more open. You know, I find it a little more difficult. Maybe, you know, I came from an era where it was quite different. You know,
the single era, Marcy.
Yeah.
Or cassette.
I prefer that. Like, you know, do you ask anyone to, like a doctor, do you ask them to give them their service for free? No. You know, you go to the doctor, you have to pay. Well, if you live in America, you do anyway. Or do you go to, you know, a shop, buy something, and you expect it for free? No. It's the same with music, and I feel pretty strongly about it, but it's kind of an expectation these days, so you kind of have to navigate yourself around it and try to be a little bit more flexible, which I try to do.
Well, obviously, we're in Australia. You're in LA. So I guess in Australia, what seems to be happening is that more people are going to live gigs. There's more bands touring than ever before. They're doing smaller, intimate gigs more often, and I guess that's where the money seems to be at the moment, is performing live and doing those live gigs. And I guess with that comes merchandise, and you've got T-shirts, and you've got, you know, different things happening, and it's almost like a small business, because you need to sort of make money in different areas, because music's now a very small part of it. Is that a fair assumption, do you think?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the artist has to wear many more hats now. You can't just be this creative kind of, you know, person that doesn't really pay attention to the business aspect of things. If you do, you're not going to be very successful. You have to wear a lot of different hats.
England Calling is your new single, which is available now online.
Yes, a very good song.
Tell us about England Calling.
Well, actually, my husband helped me write that.
He's a bit of a talented fellow.
He's very talented. You know, he actually wrote a song on my Jewel album called Out of My Mind.
Really?
Yeah, he wrote that by himself. After he met me, he was, like, completely in love with me. I didn't know. I was testing him.
He sounds very supportive.
He's very supportive, but I started that song because I just find it so weird that I've had so much success with England and connected to success. The artists that I've worked with, you know, and how I've gone lived over there and everything that I've done over there, and I have this real deep love for England. I really love it. My husband's British. Anyway, I started writing this song because I got this call, an email from somebody in England saying, hey, do you want to do this show or that? It always happens to me, so that idea came into my head to write a song called England Calling. And I started writing the song. I got kind of stuck in the chorus, and my husband came in with a great idea for the chorus. It sounds like a real anthem. And he's got a brilliant voice, by the way. We could talk like a whole other hour about him.
Maybe we should interview him next time as well.
Yeah, maybe. But, he helped me with it, and I'm really proud of it. It came out great.
Now, are you giving him royalties now?
Yeah, you probably should give him something, Marcy.
Yeah. He's got 50%.
Oh, he's struck gold. He's hit the jackpot then.
Yep.
Now, of course, the new album and single from Marcella Detroit is online now. It's called Grey Matters, featuring the track England Calling. It's released worldwide, and you can follow Marcella Detroit on her website, all over Facebook and Twitter as well.
Absolutely. Make sure you hook up with her on social media. She's a lovely character and always happy to say hello.
Thank you so much for joining us from LA this evening.
Oh, you're very welcome.
Next time you're in Australia, you must come and see us in the Joy Studios.
Absolutely.
I would love to. Yes, I hope to get down there. We have some friends that live there and would love to come and visit.
Yeah, because it's but make sure you come to Australia maybe January, February, March. It's a bit warmer.
Okay.
And a bit of a hint as well, early March is always Mardi Gras time.
Oh.
And they're always after great artists to perform at the party.
Mm-hmm, that's right.
So, with a new album coming out in September and a track called Drag Queen, that might be ideal.
I would say so.
Sounds like a good plan.
It might be along the lines of Sydney Calling rather than England Calling.
That sounds great, yeah. Well, I hope to make that happen. You're my rock across the sea. Crashing.
service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.